Good morning. Thank you so much for having me out. Thank you so much for your hospitality. I want to say a special thank you for the Hatters for having me and my family over at their place and welcoming me as their own, as well as all the elders who have made preparations to have me with them and to show kindness and hospitality. I want to thank all of you who have made us feel very welcome. This morning we're going to talk about the subject of being a servant. This is an important topic because this is one of the key facets of being a Christian. When Jesus talked about being a disciple, he often paired that concept with that of being a servant. Jesus did not talk about being a Christian. That was a term that the Christians developed as the years went by. But instead, in the Gospels, we read about service. We read about being a servant. And in our day and age, we do not have servants today the same way that they had servants back then. So it's unfortunate that we may miss out on some of the relevant aspects of being called servants or bond slaves of God. And so we would do well to remind ourselves of what the ancients thought about servants and how that culture operated. For this morning, we're going to consult two main passages, the first of which is Philippians chapter 2. So go ahead and turn over to Philippians chapter 2. We're going to be looking with verses 3 through 8. Now, we know these verses probably quite well, but there's some points within them that I would like for us to draw out. First off, when we consider being a servant, and when we consider this from a perspective of the world, we have to keep in mind that lots of people in the world will say of themselves, I'm a servant, right? Or we can look at other people in the world and we can see that they are going through acts of service. There are all sorts of things in our culture that we call service and serving in different capacities. We've got servers who service food. We often talk about the service being that of military service. So our culture is used to the word service, but we have to make sure that we're defining things the way God defines them as we apply them to being a disciple of Jesus Christ. And that's kind of the first point that I want to make about this, which is that true service requires a change. True service requires changing forms to a degree. The Satan, in his ways of working in the world itself, it has their own form of a servant. And we have to distinguish between the form of servant that the world sees versus the form of servant that Jesus demands us to be. And when you think about the way that Satan says that people serve, well, when people serve today, and you think, well, are you a servant? Do you give yourself to other people's for this or that or the other thing? Got to keep in mind that the way that the Satan wants the world to serve is still based upon self-service first. The way the world thinks about service is that first you serve yourself, and then if there's whatever left over, then you can serve other people. That's the way the world thinks about service. But here in Philippians chapter 2, in verse 3, notice how he says, do nothing out of selfish ambition. Do nothing out of selfish ambition. Why do people give themselves to certain acts of service, whether it be community service, whether it be helping the poor, whether it be feeding other people, whether it be joining military, whether it be serving people food, all those acts of service, why do people of the world do those things? There can be an argument that there is a rudimentary aspect of the image of God that is within all of us, that we want to serve other people. At the same time, we have to recognize that the Satan has infiltrated the hearts of every man that does not have Christ. Therefore, the motivations of service, when you trace it down, it's still about self-service. I do it because it makes me feel good. I do it because it fills the holes in my life. I do it so that I can gain a better benefit for myself and my family later on down the road. I do it because I feel like this will turn out to be a better result. And so while all those things are acts of service, and we should commend those acts of service, the motivations are still based on serving self first. And we have to be cautious about that. And so when we see that we've got what the people that we often refer to as good neighbors, right? Good people. They just don't have Christ the way that they need to. And we say, well, they're good people, and if they were to commit themselves completely to Christ, they wouldn't have to change all that much. That's false. They're going to have to change everything about themselves. Even if they continue to go about their acts of service as they are, the change comes from within, a mindset, an attitude in which you are no longer doing this for yourself. You're not doing this to fill the holes in your life. You're not doing this so that you can feel good. You're not doing it to assuage your own conscience. That's selfish ambition. This passage talks about changing form. It talks about completely making a change to yourself, because this is following after the pattern of Jesus. And we'll read that in verse 6 when we get to it. Notice also that Paul warns us about conceit in verse 3. Do nothing out of conceit, pride, right? Thinking better of yourself than other people. You also find that the Satan has warped people's attitudes about service so that they will think highly of themselves because of this. Look at how much I serve. Look at how much I give of myself. And now it's some talking point of conceit where you're able to put yourself above other people. I'll serve those people who are lowlier than I am. And that becomes a way of bolstering your own pride and your own opinion of yourself. So it is unfortunate, but the Satan has waylaid many people in their acts of service, which in themselves are good acts, but the motivations of which to place themselves on pedestals. Paul says that is not what God's servants do. We're not doing this for ourselves, and we're not doing this so that we can appear or be better than other people. Paul also talks about humility, then, as the counter to that in verse 3. In humility, then, consider others as more important than yourself. We have to consider the importance of other people. You know, the Satan instead talks about, you know, the phrase, take care of number one. That's the Satan talking. That's the Satan saying, you, yourself, you are number one. Take care of yourself first. And what that means is that they're going to fix limits of service based on what benefits myself. If an act of service takes away from me, from my life, from my energy, from what I want, then let's go ahead and focus on yourself first, and then you can serve other people. But this is not prioritizing the importance of others, which is what Paul says. Consider others as more important than yourself. We need to prioritize other people. And this idea of prioritizing, this idea of taking an interest in other people. Notice verse 4, everyone should look out not only for your own interests, but the interests of others. Interest there, that's an interesting English word, right? That has many different ways in which it can be defined. We talk about interest with money, right? Interest is when you gain something more than what was put into it, right? That's the interest level. Think about that in your investment with other people. You are placing into them energies, resources. Now, why do you do it? Is it because you want to gain an interest back upon you? That's a worldly way of thinking. I will scratch their back so that they can scratch my back. I will invest time and energy in them so that I can get energy and time from them at the time that I need it. That's the way a lot of people think about family in this world. A lot of people who are under the domain of Satan, fathers will raise their children. Why? So that when they need it, they can get things back from their children. Children may obey their parents. Why? So that they can gain an inheritance from their parents. That is selfish ambition. That is seeking self-interest. Instead, what Paul is telling you to do is put your time, put your energy, put all of yourself into others so that if there is an interest to be gained, it's not for you, it's for their benefit. You spend your resources so that they may benefit. That's the emphasis behind this passage here. And also notice that this requires a heart and an attitude change. This is not about changing what you do inherently. Because like I said, there can be people out in the world that are doing good things, and we're not asking them to stop doing those good things. But notice in verse 5, he says, adopt the same attitude as that of Christ Jesus. This is an attitude. This is a heart. This is a motivation. What causes you to serve? Is it so that you can get anything from it? Or is it so that they can benefit from it? That is what the form of a true servant is all about. Giving of yourself, expecting absolutely nothing in return. Not a good conscience. That's not what you expect in return. Not so that you can feel good about yourself. That's not what you get in return. It's because it benefits them. That's why I do it. Being a true servant is about emptying self. And that's what these next couple verses talk about. In verse 6, he says, Christ Jesus, who existing in the form of God, this is the Christian Standard Bible, which says, he did not consider equality with God as something to be exploited. I think that's a fantastic translation of the text. He did not consider equality of God something to be exploited, something that he could benefit from personally, because after all, he's God. Jesus did not have that attitude. Did Jesus benefit? Absolutely. But his attitude was not so that he could benefit, so that he could get stuff from the Father, from the Spirit, from you and me. That was not Jesus' attitude. And when I think about that, I think about the American concept of rights. We like our rights, don't we? And inherently, that's not a bad thing to have rights and to hold on to them if you have them. But the attitude of I have rights on the one hand, therefore I will do whatever it takes to hold on to my rights. Reflect that attitude against this attitude in verse 6. Jesus was God, is God. And yet he did not hold on to that right as something to be exploited. Instead, he used the right of being God in order to give up himself, to do what benefits you and me rather than what benefits himself. So again, the world, the Satan, uses its service in order to bolster and benefit our rights. But Jesus used his rights to benefit other people. And that's very much the same attitude that Peter talks about in 1 Peter chapter 2 as well. That you consider yourselves free, but use your freedom to serve and to love. Don't use your freedom for your own selfish gains. Notice in verse 7 where it says, instead of exploiting things, instead of seeking his own benefit, he emptied himself. He emptied himself. What did he empty himself of? The text does not say what he emptied himself of. It says he emptied himself. All of it. His whole being. His whole life. He was all in serving you. That's what it means to empty himself. He took on the likeness of humanity. But notice prior to that, it says he first assumed the form of a servant. Jesus formed himself. He changed himself in order to better fit your needs. The God of the universe, who is self-sufficient in all things, the Creator, if we would conform to him, that would be perfection. But instead, he chose in his infinite love and wisdom to conform to a form that would benefit you. That is what being a servant is all about. It's about being willing to change yourself. You say, well, don't expect me to change myself. That's the Satan speaking. Christ changed everything concerning the form in which he took so that he could benefit you. He did not leave behind his godhood. Instead, he exemplified godhood by becoming the form of a servant. This is complete dedication. This is, as we properly sing the song, none of self and all of thee. That is the attitude in which Jesus himself took. Now, we might rightly ask, and this is a healthy question to ask, well, what about self-care? What about times in which people are putting so much of themselves out that their own health, mental health, physical health starts to suffer, right? That's a legitimate question. But I find that that's still motivated by the seeds of how Satan has infiltrated the world, because you're still thinking about yourself. Instead, you'll notice that Jesus did also take what we call time for himself, right? He took time to go off into the mountains alone to pray. There were times in which he had told the disciples, hey, you've been busy at work, hard at work, when they returned from their mini-ministry during Jesus' ministry. And he said, as soon as they came back, he said, hey, we got to isolate ourselves for a little while. You're tired out. Let's go away and be alone. But you'll notice that the purpose for that was not for themselves. The purpose of being alone, the purpose of that personal recharge, wasn't so that they could have enjoyment in this life. The purpose was so that they could go on and keep doing the work. It was still for the sake of others that they placed whatever necessary emphasis there was on recharging their own energies so that they could serve others more. The reality is that if you do expend all of your energies to the point of whether it be your own physical, mental health, then you are no longer equipped to serve other people. So the idea there is simply recharge what you need to, regain the energies that you need to, not for yourself, but for others, so that that energy can be used for the Lord. That's the attitude of Christ. A true servant changes his shape without compromising identity. That's what Jesus did. He took the form of a servant, even the likeness of a human, but he did not compromise his identity. He didn't change his being God. And likewise, as we go about serving our brethren, even serving the world and doing good for them, we change our form. We are willing to adapt. We are malleable. We are those who are willing to, as Paul would say in 1 Corinthians 9, become all things to all people. That's what Christ did for you. He became a human for you. So what lengths are you willing to go through to change your own preferences, to change your own opinions, to be willing to let those things go so that you can reach others, so that you can help others, serve them, love them, bring them to Christ? You don't have to compromise the truth to do that. We never compromise the truth. We never compromise our identity as a child of God. Instead, we explore our identity as children of God. We heighten our identity. We show our identity as children of God through our conformity, through our ability to form ourselves into a servant of other people, seeking their benefits and not our own. And lastly, in verse 8, true servanthood, being a servant, is about obeying, even in the face of ultimate suffering. The Satan fixes the limits of service to the point of suffering, right? Serve other people so long as you don't hurt in the process. Jesus was a servant, humbling himself to the point of obedience, even to death on the cross, which sometimes we forget, just the extreme level of humiliation that the cross was. Jesus was willing to go even that far. He was all in for you. Paul says, have that attitude. Have that mindset. That is being a servant of the Lord. As a quick example of this, let's head over to the Gospel of Mark. Gospel of Mark chapter 10, and see what Jesus himself said about this very topic. Mark chapter 10, verses 32 through 34 read like this. They were on the road going up to Jerusalem, and Jesus was walking ahead of them. The disciples were astonished. Those who followed were afraid. Taking the 12 aside again, he began to tell them the things that would happen to him. See, we are going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be handed over to the chief priests and the scribes. They will condemn him to death. Then they will hand him over to the Gentiles. They will mock him, spit on him, flog him, kill him, and he will rise after 3 days. Jesus' intentions as coming as the Son of Man, this is mirroring what we were told in Philippians 2, that he came in the likeness of a human body. He came as the Son of Man, and that's greater than just being a human. This is fulfilling Daniel chapter 7 with taking up the throne of God. Why did Jesus accept upon himself the mantle of human? Why did he accept upon himself the crown of God from Daniel chapter 7? It's so that he could die, suffer, be mocked, be insulted, be humiliated. That's why he did it. And you'll notice that the first couple verses, verse 32, said that some were astonished, others were afraid. This is again the attitude of the Satan that's trying to hold on to each of us. As Jesus goes to Jerusalem, his place of death, and as we begin to follow our leader, as Satan tempts us to fall away because we don't want to suffer. We don't want to go through that pain. And so as we follow Jesus, there's going to be this attitude of hesitancy, this attitude of astonishment, this attitude of fear. And as we get closer and closer to the very death of Jesus, we become more and more uncomfortable. But you know, that is by design, because we're not supposed to be disciples of Jesus as we are in the world. We're supposed to change our expectation, change our own form, change our own attitudes, change our own minds. And in this passage, Jesus is trying to teach his disciples to be willing to change their expectations about service and servanthood. So let's keep on reading. Let's skip on down to verses 42 through 45 for a minute. We'll come back to the middle verses. Verse 42, Jesus calls over his disciples. He says to them, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles, they lord it over them, and those in high positions act as tyrants over them, but it is not so among you. On the contrary, whoever wants to be the great among you will be your servant. Whoever wants to be first among you will be the slave to all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, to give his life a ransom for many." Change your expectations about the kingdom. Greatness in the kingdom of heaven is defined by service. Again, Satan is trying to convince you that it's about self-service, pride, lifting yourself up, seeing how better you are than everyone else through your service. Jesus says that's not what it's about. You're a servant to all. You come doing it with an attitude of saying, others are better than me. Others are more important than me. So I will serve them, even the least of them. Notice how he says he is a servant of all. Not just the ones I like. Oh, I like that guy, I'll serve him. Serve the ones you don't like. Not just those who benefit you. Oh, that person, they gives me things, you know, when I need them. Serve the person who gives you nothing. Not just the person deserves it. Serve the person who doesn't deserve it. Serve all. Serve all. Doesn't matter their race, doesn't matter their background, their religious preference, where they came from, that is. It doesn't matter what their wealth status is. It doesn't matter what their accent is. It doesn't matter if they even speak the same language as you. Serve them. Love them. Treat them as more important than yourself. That's what Jesus did for you. Jesus says, "I came to give my life as a ransom." A ransom. A sacrifice, an exchange. Sacrifice yourself for those who don't deserve it, because Jesus sacrificed himself for you, even when you didn't deserve it. And even as Jesus sacrificed himself for some people who would never actually obey, Jesus died on the cross even for those who would die in their sins. Jesus gave himself on the cross as a sacrifice, as a ransom for those who would continue to reject him and hate him the rest of their life. Sometimes we feel like, well, I'll serve those who will eventually become Christians. I'll serve those who are already my brethren. Or I'll serve my brethren who do it the right way, right? But those brethren over there, they're not doing it the right way. I'm not going to serve them. This brethren over here has a grudge against me. I'm not going to serve them. On and on it goes. Give your life as a ransom for many, for all, even those who don't deserve it, even for the chance that they might come to heaven one day. Now let's think about the in-between verses that we skipped over, and let's compare those verses with the end of the chapter. So in verse 35 through 40, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, approached Jesus and said, "Teacher, we want you to do whatever we ask you." It's a dangerous question, right? But verse 36, Jesus says, "Well, what do you want me to do for you?" They answered, "Allow us to sit at your right and at your left when you come in glory." Jesus said to them, "You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink? Be immersed with the immersion that I am immersed with?" And they said, "Oh, we're able." Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup that I drink. You will be immersed with the immersion that I am immersed with. But to sit at my right or my left is not mine to give. It's for those to whom it has been prepared." Now, of course, this is what begins that discussion then, of being a servant to all. You'll notice that James and John hadn't learned that lesson yet. They were coming to Jesus thinking that we could serve the king so that he could serve us. We want you to do whatever we ask. How many times do we unfortunately follow that pattern? We'll come to Christ, but we want him to do whatever we want him to do. We want to sit in the high places of glory. They were not coming to Jesus with the expectation of changing, forming themselves after a servant. And that's what Jesus was trying to teach them in those verses that we talked about. Now let's compare this to the end of the chapter, starting in verse 46. They came to Jericho, and as he was leaving Jericho with his disciples, a large crowd, Bartimaeus, the son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting by the road. And when he heard that Jesus of Nazareth, he began to cry out, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." And many warned him to keep quiet. But he cried out all the more, "Have mercy on me, son of David." Jesus stopped and said, "Call him." So they called to the blind man and said, "Well, have courage, get up, he's calling for you." He threw off his coat, jumped up, came to Jesus, and Jesus answered him, "What do you want me to do for you?" "Rabbi," the blind man said, "I want to see." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has healed you." And immediately he could see, and he began to follow Jesus on the road. Notice the contrast between these two requests. John and James came and said, "We have a question." And notice Jesus said, "What do you want me to do for you?" They wanted glory. They wanted high position. They wanted honor. And Jesus' answer was essentially, "No." At least not the way you think. You're going to have to change your expectations before you ever get to that place. But you'll notice Bartimaeus comes, and Jesus asks Bartimaeus the exact same question. "What do you want me to do for you?" Bartimaeus just said, "I just want to see." Now, Jesus knew Bartimaeus' heart. But there's two indications in this text that Bartimaeus' heart were exactly what Jesus was looking for. The first being, or I guess three indications, the first being that he kept on crying out to Jesus. Even when everybody was telling him to shut up, even when everybody was telling him, "Go away, Bartimaeus, nobody likes you, nobody wants you," he kept on going. That attribute is so important for us that we keep on reaching out for Jesus. The second attitude here is that he threw off his cloak. He's a blind man. Do you think in that crowd he's ever going to have the chance of finding that cloak again? No, he is never going to see that cloak again. That's his only livelihood. That's the only thing to keep him warm. And as a blind beggar, you can imagine it's the only thing he knows. He throws it away. Why? Because he is 100% all in for Jesus. He knows Jesus has the answer. And the third indication is that it says he began to follow Jesus on the road. At the beginning of our text, we read that people were following Jesus. They were timid. They were fearful. They were curious. They were astonished. They didn't really want to follow Jesus on the road. This man was all in. Let's go to Jerusalem. He knew exactly what he was getting into. That's the attitude Jesus is looking for. Bartimaeus was looking for the opportunity to give himself up, looking for the opportunity to conform himself after the image and the pattern of Jesus, walking to Jerusalem, walking straight into suffering and death. And Bartimaeus was looking for the opportunity, I believe, to serve. That's the contrast being made here, and that's the teaching that Jesus is trying to teach us. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. James and John still had a lesson to learn. By the grace of God, I believe they did learn it. But you and I, as we follow as disciples of Jesus, ask ourselves, are we acting like James and John, thinking that we're going to gain from our service? Or are we like Bartimaeus, willing to cast off everything, follow Jesus into the very heart of suffering, just so that we can be in a position to help others more?